It is such a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2022, returning MOI Global instructor, Jeffrey Stacey, chairman and CEO of Stacey Muirhead Capital Management. Jeff is founder of the firm and has more than 35 years of investment industry experience. He holds an Honors Bachelor of Business Administration degree from Wilfrid Laurier University and is a chartered financial analyst. Jeff has been involved in many charitable and board activities throughout his career. He has served on several investment committees, including for two Canadian universities. In addition, he has served on the advisory boards for two university student-managed investment funds. And Jeff, I know that everyone in the MOI Global community knows you well by now and truly appreciates your contributions to this community, as well as the broader value investing community generally. You have been a true mentor to so many of us, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful that you're taking the time to be with us again today. So without further ado, Jeff, I'd like to turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Well, John, thank you very much for the kind comments and introduction. It's a pleasure to be here today. Let me start by returning a compliment to you. I am a avid follower and supporter and reader of content on the MOI website, and enjoy these conferences very much for the ideas that I get. And I think the other thing that is just incredibly unique to MOI is this community of like-minded investors that are coming together. And I know I've made some wonderful friendships over the years from the MOI community. And I think especially given the times we've gone through the last few years, having like-minded friends and colleagues to call upon is more important than ever. So I just thank you, John, for all that you do to advance the craft of investing, and just thank you very much for having me on. And this is my third straight appearance at the Best Ideas Conference, and I must tell you it's a little bit daunting and almost frightening. So I'm two for two in the last two conferences with two picks that have performed very well. And it's funny, you know, you don't go into this necessarily with a one-year perspective, but somehow it behaviorally, that's where you almost come to in the end. And so I hope I can keep the streak going with another idea again this year. So without further ado, maybe we should get going. Just a disclaimer to start, we'll leave that to the members to read. As I've done the last 2 years, I want to just start with a real quick run through our investment philosophy, not because it's different than most of the other members, but I just think it sort of plants or sets the table, if you will, or plants the seed of you know, how we invest, and then that helps you put our best idea into perspective, perhaps. So the essence of what we do, I'd say there's really three parts to it. We're unconstrained, meaning because we're not a large investment management firm by choice, we can buy small stocks, we can buy large stocks, we can go up and down the capital structure, we can buy debentures or bonds, if that makes sense, or common. We're not restricted to any particular sector. We view ourselves as global. I mean, at present, we're in 11 or 12 different countries around the world in terms of where the head offices of our holdings are located. And then, you know, above all else, we're valuation driven, and we're willing to look at lots of different ways to think about companies and think about how they should be valued, but above all else, we just need a margin of safety in everything that we do. To break that down just a bit further, I'd say there's four planks to what we do, and two carry the day, if you will, and are the lion's share of what we do. So we're trying to make long-term investments in a limited number of companies that we think are really great. We'll also participate in event-driven investments where appropriate to do so. And then the other two planks, we just talk about, you know, other commitments. And that's just, we want to have the flexibility. And that's just simply something that doesn't neatly fit into the long-term investment bucket or the event-driven bucket. And then, not dissimilar to many of the MOI members, when we have more capital than good ideas, we try to be very disciplined, and we're not going to let we're not going to force it, and we're willing to let the cash and cash equivalents build up. And above all else, we consider ourselves fundamental researchers, and you know, stock picking is the cornerstone of everything. So, you know, best ideas generally would happily talk about some event-driven investments, but this is probably not the right forum to do that. So by definition, we're looking at a long-term investment for our best idea. And so what do we look for in our long-term investments? Comes down to answering three questions with any company that we're considering. Does that company possess outstanding business economics? Does it have honest and capable management? And can it be purchased at an attractive price? And this is certainly not original thinking, but we like the phraseology, great business, great people, great price. So let's drill down a little bit further before we get to our idea. So I'm going to go through the three questions and just talk about some of the things that we look for. And certainly this is not an all-inclusive list, but you know, some of the common things that we think are important in any long-term investment that we make. So we're looking for high returns on shareholder equity and strong balance sheet, minimal or no debt or net cash after debt. Obviously attractive operating and profit margins, and you'd like to see those growing over time. Maybe a company has significant brand recognition, or maybe it has pricing power. Pricing power, it seems to me, is particularly important in the current environment that we find ourselves in. And I'm not weighing in on whether inflation is permanent or transitory or anything else, but if we're in an inflationary environment, certainly you want to have companies that have the ability to increase the price for the products or services that they sell. Like your members, the other members of MOI, we're looking for growing revenue and earnings over time and consistent free cash flow generation. So does it have honest and capable management? Certainly high on the list for us is we want the management teams that we partner with to have skin in the game. And that's probably the single biggest thing that we look for over time. Certainly we want reasonable compensation practices, and where there's a pay for performance component, we want that to be readily measurable. Obviously we're looking for management teams with demonstrated integrity, and you know, the capital allocation record is certainly very, very important in trying to assess how they've allocated capital over time. And or just signal, you know, share repurchases can be an important part of that capital allocation record. And then the other thing I would just highlight, you know, the more time I spend in the business, some of our better investments just have a very definable and unique corporate culture. And I find myself spending more and more time thinking about company cultures and, you know, the uniqueness of that culture. And then on price, I really don't have, we're using all the same analysis that everyone else is, you know, various ratios, price earnings, price cash flow, all those sorts of things. So here's just a quote from Buffett and Warren Buffett, and I've used this quote the last couple of years, but it just it resonates with me. Your goal as an investor should be simply to purchase at a rational price a part interest in an easily understood business whose earnings are virtually certain to be materially higher 5, 10, or 20 years from now. So that sets the table here for the discussion to follow, other than to say there's a look-through component to my best idea this year. And so my best idea for 2022 is Fairfax India Holdings. And let's dig in, and I'll try and break that down for you, and give you the reasons why I feel that it's a good idea. So, quick corporate overview. Fairfax India Holdings Corporation is an investment holding company whose objective is to achieve long-term capital appreciation by investing in public and private equity securities and debt instruments in India and Indian businesses. So let me try and give you a bit of a background so we can put this into perspective. Fairfax Financial, who organized and manages Fairfax India, has and had a very excellent long-term track record in India, but they believed that the opportunity was significant enough and attractive enough that they could wanted to attract to get some outside investor capital. And so they completed the IPO of Fairfax India January 30th, 2015. Fairfax Financial owns just under 30%, and OMERS, the large Canadian pension plan, owns 14.2%. Now, Fairfax controls it through a multiple voting structure, but that's on a share basis, the ownership today. I think it's important to point out, so Fairfax has started a company that they own 100% of called Fairbridge Capital, based in Mumbai, that provides a lot of the investment support and due diligence work. And Fairbridge Capital is quite capably run by Sumit Maheshwari, and they do a great job. The other thing that I think is important here is Fairfax India, think of it like a closed-end investment fund, and from an accounting perspective, they're utilizing IFRS investment entity accounting, which just means we're attempting, well, in terms of the public market investments, you're marking that to market every quarter using bid. There's a couple of exceptions where they have some sale restrictions in place where that might get marked down further. And then the private investments use a variety of valuation techniques and models to come up with something that approximates fair value. So, you know, I've just made the note here, book value per share is a rough proxy for intrinsic value. Now, certainly public companies can be above or below fair value, and certainly my experience with the valuation of the private companies at Fairfax is that they've tended to be quite reasonable and conservative over time. So I know Warren Buffett at Berkshire and Tom Gaynor at Markel has commented about many times about how in their operations book value is becoming less and less important as a measure of fair value or intrinsic value. And although I certainly think there's differences, and I would like to think that Fairfax India has a value, a fair value or an intrinsic value above book value, I'm going to talk a lot about book value during this presentation as just a rough proxy for intrinsic value. So one of the things that I do think is somewhat unique about Fairfax India Holdings is the business model. And let me try and take you through, you know, how could a closed-end investment fund have unique attributes? Well, first thing I would say is they can do both private or public equities. And, you know, so that is somewhat of a distinguishing factor. They can purchase debt instruments if that's the right way to go. They can invest for control or significant ownership, which they have done, or they can invest just because it's a good portfolio investment. And an example of, you know, just a simple portfolio investment is their 1% investment in the National Stock Exchange. So I think that's a flexibility that you don't always see in investment funds. They have the ability to partner with quality investors, and they have both Canadian investors and investors in India, and certainly the partnership with OMERS has been very fruitful over time, and there's been a recent development here towards the end of the third quarter of 2021 that I'll pertaining to OMERS that I'll talk to and address shortly. Have a flexible capital structure. They can issue shares. They can issue debt. They can buy back shares if that's the appropriate thing to do. So I think that makes them somewhat unique. And then I think it's a long duration asset with no defined end date. So the way I think about this business model is I think it gives them a significant advantage over both traditional private equity funds and over conventional equity investment management in India. And it's this unique aspect of combining the best of both private equity and public equity management that I think makes them very unique. And just to address the last point on long duration asset, I mean, most private equity funds have a 7-8 year life cycle, and so they're rapidly putting money to work from the capital they raise in year 1, 2, 3, and you know they're harvesting it at year 5, 6, 7. And I just like the notion of this long duration asset with no defined end date, and I think that it provides a sustainable competitive advantage for Fairfax India. So just some basic market data. Market price at the end of 2021 was $12.61 a share. Throughout this presentation, all the data I'm giving you are in US dollars unless I indicate otherwise. Shares outstanding, 142 million. And market capitalization, 1.8 billion. And then the book value, and obviously we don't have the year-end numbers yet, but I'll talk to sort of an estimate later on in my presentation, but stated book value at the end of September was $20.37. And the total cash and investments that they're putting to work is $3.75 billion. So let's frame this in terms of the three questions I articulated earlier. Does it possess outstanding business economics? And this is where you have to look through the companies or through the Fairfax India structure and look to the companies that they own. But let me try and just give you some sense of how I see this. So certainly over time, consistent value creation, from 2015 through to September 30th, 2021, they've more than doubled book value per share. Common shareholders' equity has grown despite the last few years. They've been sizable repurchasers of shares. And then you just along the bottom there, you can see the total cash and investments. And as mentioned earlier, it's roughly $3.75 billion at September 30th. So what's the record? So I'm taking the IPO on January 30th of 2015. I'm using the $10 IPO price, and book value up to the end of the third quarter is compounded at 11.3%. And over the same time period, the share price is compounded at only 4%. So it's the share price is definitely underperformed the book value per share growth rate over the inception of this company. So some recent developments. In the third quarter, Fairfax India conducted a share tender offer. They purchased a little over 7 million shares at $14.90 per share. Obviously, this was a significant discount to the third quarter book value, so that will be accretive or continue to be accretive, and they purchased additional shares in the fourth quarter. One of their holdings, Sanmar Chemical Group, took one of its subsidiary companies public in an IPO. It's trading above the IPO price, so and that's allowed Sanmar to clean up its balance sheet, and it's a much more attractive company today. Sanmar is a large manufacturer of PVC and caustic soda with operations in India and Egypt, but primarily an Indian-based company. Anchorage Infrastructure Investments Holdings. So Fairfax India has been the 54% owner of the Bangalore International Airport. And so they agreed to take 43.6% of that investment and put it into a new company called Anchorage Infrastructure, which is going to be the platform in India for Fairfax India to make infrastructure investments. So think airport privatizations, other forms of transportation, infrastructure privatizations. As they formed this company, OMERS, and you'll recall earlier, OMERS is a large direct investor in Fairfax India, but OMERS has also purchased an 11.5% interest in Anchorage Infrastructure at the same price that Bangalore International Airport has been valued at for valuation purposes. And so, you know, the goal here would be to then do an IPO for Anchorage Infrastructure to raise some more capital so that they can pursue these transportation infrastructure investments in India. In the fourth quarter, Fairfax India closed on an investment in a company called Maxop Engineering. They have about a two-thirds interest in this company. It's a large precision die-cast, aluminum die-cast and parts manufacturer, selling to both tier two auto and also directly to auto manufacturers, and their products are ending up in Ford cars, Renault cars, John Deere, Tata vehicles in India. So very interesting investment. So then I've talked, a $20.37 book value at the end of September. There were market price declines for the public investments in the fourth quarter. I would estimate that's dropped the book value probably to about, 19.25 per share. The rupee was basically flat against the U.S. dollar. It declined a little bit. Of course, Fairfax India continued to purchase shares in the fourth quarter, so that will be accretive to book value, going the other way, if you will. And we don't know yet what valuations might apply to some of the private Indian investments, and so we'll see. But just based on the public Indian investments, the book value will likely drop a little bit for the end of the year. although I should comment through the first 10 days of January, the market prices for their public investments have increased again and certainly are back in line with where they were at September 30th. So, you know, that's going to move up and down. And again, you know, we get to this concept of book value being a rough proxy for intrinsic value. And certainly things are going to move around over time. But those are kind of the major recent developments for Fairfax India. This is not an all-inclusive list, but just some of the investments that they own. You know, Seven Islands, a large shipping tanker company, Sanmar that we mentioned earlier. They originally purchased an investment in the IIFL. It was one company. It's subsequently split into four companies. So I've just showed you two there, IIFL Finance and IIFL Wealth. And they own a large investment in CSB Bank. And their first investment in India was NCML, which is a large grain storage and elevator facility or company throughout India. So again, just looking at the September 30th data, because we don't yet have Fairfax India's year-end data, public Indian investments were about 36% of the total. Private Indian investments, 58%, and cash and bonds, call it 6.5% of the total. And those figures are in dollar thousands, so that's $3.7 billion is the total. Just wanted to take you through, and I should just say I've maybe categorized a few of these slightly different than Fairfax India itself in its third quarter, but there's... most of the investments or the lion's share of the investments. Just want to talk to two. So NCML is the only investment that they are underwater on of everything they've done throughout their history. So they put more money into NCML than it's currently valued at. And this is a private investment, so they're valuing that at using various models and cash flow assessments to come up with a value. And then obviously Bangalore International Airport is a large, the largest investment, just under 37% of the total. So, you know, if you're going to invest in Fairfax India, it's right and proper to think about the Bangalore Airport and come up with some sense of whether you think it's worth that carrying value or not. Financial position, cash and short-term investments, $84.5 million. They have $496 million in debt. Just point out that was a seven-year bond issue that matures in 2028. Little over $3 billion in common equity, and so the debt-to-equity ratio 0.16 to 1. So this is not a company that's highly leveraged, and certainly that's a key part of our investment approach. We'll just talk to the share repurchases. So in 2020, they bought back 3.2 million shares at a price of about $9.14 per share. In 2021, including the tender offer for 7 million shares, they've bought back about 8.2 million shares at a price of $14.45 all in. Remember, again, book value for what it's worth at the end of the third quarter was $20.37. So they're buying in those shares at quite a discount to book value. And I just want to comment, I think I'm using accurate data for the fourth quarter, but I might be off by a little bit. Sometimes it's hard to properly assess those share repurchases and whether they all get canceled or not. But I think I've given you accurate data, and it certainly won't be off by much if I'm incorrect. So I mentioned earlier, you know, Bangalore Airport accounts for 37% of the total valuation or the total investments at Fairfax India. So I think it's important that maybe we talk to Bangalore Airport for a moment. So it's the world's fastest growing airport, and it's India's third largest airport behind Mumbai and the Delhi airport. It has a strategic position in southern India. It's obviously the largest airport in southern India. Bangalore is the IT capital of India. Certainly, a lot of the perishable food products come and auto products come from southern India, from factories in southern India. So it's an important cargo shipment point for India. And in terms of just operationally, it was one runway. They completed a second runway in 2019. And the second terminal is to be completed in 2022, taking capacity to 50 million passengers. So growing very rapidly. They did about 33.5 million in 2019. Obviously, since the pandemic started, passenger counts have been down as they have been for airports all around the world. The current valuation of 2.6 billion, and that's on 100% basis for the airport, is very reasonable in my opinion. And let me just, what support do I have for that statement? Well, earlier I commented that, OMERS through Anchorage has effectively acquired about a 5% interest in the Bangalore Airport at that valuation of $2.6 billion. So, you have an arm's length, third-party, highly regarded investor with lots of experience in India saying that they think that's a fair price to pay. And then I've made a comment here. Since Sydney Airport, the Sydney, Australia Airport, is being taken private at a valuation of 23.6 billion Aussie dollars, or roughly 17 billion US dollars. And so that's, almost seven times the valuation of the Bangalore Airport, but yet the profitability in 2019 was about three times higher than the Bangalore Airport. Passenger counts, Sydney Airport in 2019 did 44, call it 44.5 million passengers relative to 33.5 for Bangalore. The Bangalore Airport has almost 500 acres of residual land that's being slowly and methodically developed under the terms of a master plan put together by BIAL. Sydney Airport has about half that amount of acreage that would be excess. Certainly cargo is setting records at Bangalore, although still lower than Sydney. But with Bangalore Airport being the world's fastest growing airport, I guess I would just say to you, on the basic numbers, I see the valuation of Sydney compared to Bangalore as being quite reasonable for Bangalore in just looking at some basic data. So, does Fairfax India possess superior business economics? Certainly, excellent long-term growth and book value per share. It's a, in my judgment, a unique business model that gives it a sustainable competitive advantage over traditional private equity and over traditional or conventional investment management in India. They have a diverse group of holdings with solid growth prospects. In my opinion, the valuations are reasonable, both on the mark-to-market public side and in terms of the various models and techniques that they're using to value the private investments. They've been making accretive share repurchases, have stepped that up in 2021 given the size of the discount, and they have a strong financial position. So my take on all of this is that they do possess superior business economics. Does it have honest and capable management? Would just comment. So let's talk through the skin in the game component. Premwatts owns 1.5 million Fairfax common shares. He's the controlling shareholder. Fairfax in turn owns a lot of Fairfax India. Premwatts directly owns 320,000 Fairfax India shares. So I would argue that as chairman of Fairfax India, he certainly has his skin in the game, both indirectly through Fairfax Financials, the controlling shareholder, and directly through his ownership of 320,000 Fairfax India common shares. Other officers, including Chandran Ratnaswamy, the CEO, own common shares in both companies. So I'm comfortable on the skin in the game question on balance. I think they've made some really intelligent investments over the last 6-7 years in India, but I would also just comment that their capital allocation program includes an active share repurchase program, and particularly when the shares are at a discount, and they've purchased 8.2 million, or purchased approximately, I may be off a little bit, 8.2 million shares in 2021. Excellent board of directors, and you know the danger when you name names is you leave out some talented people, but I want to just mention two. Satish Rai is the chief investment officer of OMERS, so I think it's significant that he's standing as a director and lending his expertise on behalf of OMERS to Fairfax India. And then Deepak Parekh, who's the chairman of HDFC in India, a very large, well-known financial services company that has a excellent long-term track record of growing value for shareholders, has been a key advisor to Fairfax Financial and Fairfax India over the years, and he sits on the board. I would just also make the comment, you know, you may recall last year I talked about Fairfax Financial as my best investment idea for 2021, and I spent some time talking about the Fairfax guiding principles. And I would just say that I think Fairfax India benefits from those guiding principles. So does it have honest and capable management? Skin in the game? Yes. I think they have a very solid, good capital allocation record, and they make share repurchases when it's attractive to do so. I think they have an excellent board of directors. And I think this is a company that, through Fairfax Financial's influence, has a unique corporate culture. So in terms of can it be purchased at an attractive price, I would just say, you know, warts and all, you're at a 38.1% discount to the September 30th book value. I would not be surprised to see the book value per share drop in the fourth quarter, but certainly call it, you know, 19.25, so still a huge discount to book value. And then I'll just let the membership judge for themselves whether they think the mark-to-market prices of the public investments it represents a fair valuation or not. My belief is that all those companies have significant growth prospects, and I think they're quite reasonably priced at those mark-to-market numbers. And likewise for the private Indian investments, you know, I don't think that Fairfax India is pushing those valuations at all. I think they're quite reasonable. So my own personal view is that intrinsic value is worth, or the intrinsic value of Fairfax India is higher than the book value per share, whether at September 30th or possibly at a reduced December 31st valuation. I think it's intrinsic value is higher than those numbers. But even if you use book value as a rough proxy for intrinsic value, these shares are trading at a significant discount that I think is unjustified. So, in summary, I would just say I think this is a great business with great run by great people that's available at a great price. And with that, I'll conclude and throw it back to you, John.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for the presentation. Perhaps we could start with the management or the decision makers here. Who makes the decisions for, let's say, new investments or disposal of investments?
So clearly, the management team at Fairfax Financial in Toronto has the ultimate responsibility. So, Prem has extensive experience in India. Chandran Ratnaswamy, the CEO, has extensive experience, investment experience in India. And Gopal Soundarajan, who's the Chief Operating Officer, also has extensive investment experience in India. He came to Fairfax through ICICI Lombard. You may recall that Fairfax Financial partnered with ICICI Bank to form an insurance company. Gopal was the chief investment officer of that entity. When Fairfax decided to sell that entity mostly back to ICICI Bank so that they could take on the Digit Insurance operation. Under Indian law, you weren't allowed to own two. So they aligned with Digit, and Gopal came to Toronto to be part of the management team in Toronto. Obviously, the whole Hamblin Watsa investment team is involved. And then I mentioned earlier Fairbridge Capital, which is a subsidiary of Fairfax that was formed, that's run by Sumit Maheshwari, based in Mumbai. And they do a lot of the work, certainly, the due diligence work and a lot of the investment work. But ultimately, the investment decision making comes down to the senior executives, which are Prem, Gopal, and Chandran.
And does Fairfax Financial basically defer all of its India investments to Fairfax India? Is there some kind of an arrangement there?
Yes, that's a great question. And so, obviously Fairfax Financial has been investing in India for a long, long time before the start of Fairfax India. And so the arrangement, if you will, is that Fairfax Financial will certainly own any of the insurance operations in India directly. There is two legacy investments, Thomas Cook India, the money exchange and travel company, and then Quess, which is one of the is a large employer in India in the temporary employment and space. And so those were historic investments. The intention is that other than in the area of insurance and in the area of travel through Thomas Cook, that on a go-forward basis, Fairfax India will make those investments. And, you know, the historic premise was Fairfax just reached a point where they believed that the opportunities in India were far larger than they could make commitments based solely on the Fairfax financial capital. So that was the idea behind attracting outside capital through the Fairfax India structure. And I would just say, you know, there's no conflict here. I mean, they've clearly defined those areas that were legacy areas and new investments being done through Fairfax India. The only further investments that Fairfax Financial will make is in the legacy areas, so insurance and, you know, the travel money exchange business. But there's no conflict. They've laid that out quite clearly.
What is the scope for new investments in light of the fact that they are long-term holders, so not looking to sell necessarily their existing portfolio? There's some debt on the balance sheet already. So are they actively looking for new investments? And if so, how would they fund those?
Again, great question. So I'll maybe sidestep it first and then come back to your question. I mean, obviously, I think they feel pretty strongly that the best investment they can make right now, given the huge discount, is in Fairfax India. You know, they have lots of ways to fund. I mean, they do have cash. They do have some public just portfolio investment positions that could be used to fund further investments in India. So there's lots of ways to do that. And, you know, it may involve share issuance at some point if the discount was removed or lessened dramatically, you know, maybe, and there was a great opportunity for them to pursue. Yes, they're long-term investors, John, but, you know, from time to time, it makes sense both from a price point of view and strategically for them to monetize certain things. So there's always opportunities that way. It's a fair statement if you wanted to say that they're perhaps tighter than they've been in a while in terms of liquidity to fund new initiatives. But I don't think if the right opportunity comes along, there's lots of ways to finance it. And again, this is back to that sort of unique business model, because they're both in the public and the private side. You know, maybe one of their private investments will go public, or maybe that might fund a dividend up to Fairfax India. So there's lots of ways for them to attack that problem. But right now, and I think it's significant, and I will only speak from my perspective as an investor, I'm happy to see them buying back the shares at the scale they are, because I just think the discount is too wide. And I think that's probably one of the most attractive investments that they can make.
Absolutely. I guess sometimes when these kinds of vehicles are started, and I believe I remember it being the case with Greenlight Re of David Einhorn, that in the early days, it traded at a premium to book value. And so the growth path was pretty clear. You issue equity at 2x book, you can make investments, and if that persists, you have a nice growth engine. So in the absence of Fairfax India trading at book or above and issuing shares, do you think they would actually consider having an asset management business under the Fairfax India Holdings umbrella, where they raise capital and they charge fees to manage other people's capital in India.
That's an interesting perspective. I mean, first, you know, in comparison to the green light, I certainly hope we can create that problem for Fairfax India, where they're trading at a significant premium. Obviously, it isn't today. And, you know, I think they're doing the right things in terms of, you know, repurchasing shares. I wouldn't rule it out that they would start an asset management operation. But I guess my sense of it, without any precision or any knowledge, is, you know, I think they're more committed to the model that they've got within Fairfax India. And of course, the other thing I would comment is, you know, by and large, the underlying holdings, the core holdings where they have a significant ownership, are reasonably financed. And so I think, you know, those growth prospects can drive a lot of valuation growth over time for Fairfax India too. So wouldn't rule that out. I want to think about that some more. I guess my first instinct is that that's not likely something they would do. I mean, they have a large investment in IIFL, which in turn has its own asset management and quite a thriving asset management business. And so, you know, I think indirectly they're getting some aspects of an asset management play through IIFL. But that's a great question, and I want to ponder that.
And Jeff, perhaps a last question from me. In terms of the discount to the stated book value, do you know how that compares historically for Fairfax India?
Well, certainly it's over the cumulative time from 2015, that's a big discount. I mean, the share price actually bottomed at, you know, six something, you know, in 2020. And at that time you had a 16 something book value. So that discount would be the all-time greatest discount, but that didn't last for long. And, you know, certainly they bought back shares at a little over $9 cumulatively throughout 2020. So I guess I would just say it's not the biggest discount of all time, but it's certainly, relative to its history, a large discount and larger than normal.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for the presentation. I would just encourage our members to feel free to reach out with any further thoughts or questions. Truly appreciate you laying out this investment thesis for the MOI Global community. It's a compelling case and it fits your framework very well. So thanks again for being with us and taking the time to share.
Yeah, thank you, John. It's a pleasure as always. I get a great deal from the MOI community, and certainly if anyone has any questions, make sure they get funneled through to me, and I'll do my best to answer them. So thank you very much.
Terrific. Take care. Goodbye for now.
Take care.